of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
SiriusXM Sports presents... At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three, our last here in New Orleans after a really fun week. It's hard not to have fun here and eat well and everything that goes along with racetrack experiences. Andy Serling joins us. Andy, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent, excellent. Getting ready to head to Hot Springs.
I tell you what, your life is just one endless stream of fun.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Somebody responded to me over the weekend. Nice work if you can get it. I believe me, I'm appreciative of what I get to do. It's and we all are, right? I mean, who isn't appreciative of, you know, being involved in the game like this?
Well, you're self-employed, Steve. So nobody's paying you. You earn your own money.
Well, I thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you. Speaking of earning some money, the weekend had its share of opportunities, and I was saving Friday's recap, Andy, from the pick five carryover and the pick six carryover. Certainly, you know, one difficult horse on that card, the John Service Invader that came up from Philly. That, you know, kind of boosted the returns on both sides, and then we had the cross country on Saturday.
I don't remember what happened. The cross country blew up with the Oakland winner, right?
Yeah, with the Last Samurai with Lucas.
Right. Yeah, that was a district race. The Razorback, actually, it's also an oddly run race. I mean, with what's his name not breaking, Ginobili didn't break.
Yep.
And then I'm not exactly sure what Jose Ortiz was doing on Law Professor, and Joel didn't break that sharply with the horse who ran second.
West Willpower had to rush up.
Right?
Yep.
And he made the right move rushing him up in the backstretch because the pace was slow. This is a paid race on paper. It looked to have a fast pace, but the break really completely changed the dynamic of the race. And, despite it all, the winner was able to make a real close in there. And he's the only horse that effectively closed at all. I thought Christian Chores, who rode him, has just been riding fabulously down at Oakland. He had five winners yesterday.
Yeah.
And then they made a 15-1 shot of his in the last race, like 4-1. That was interesting. Last time, I know he'd won the Oakland handicap last year, but he won it by going to lead in a slow pace. This was a totally different situation. What a neat horse.
And I'm looking forward to, you know, hoping to get a chance maybe to talk to Lucas. Dallas Stewart had the horse early on, and he did well. I mean, Dallas did okay.
Yeah, he had him last year. He won the Oakland handicap.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, no, I don't know the circumstances. Obviously, horses owned by the, I guess, the Willis Horton Trust or whatever it is.
Yes.
He passed away last fall. Last fall, I think he passed away. Is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's about right. Yep.
But yeah, that was pretty cool, actually. I think the other races. I thought the winner of the second turf sprint, it was Hamble, was a little tough. I mean, it was a surprise horse in the lead because there was a lot of speed in there, and he didn't have any speed at all, but you know, it just shows when a rider is aggressive, it could things happen.
Hey, well,
a lot of those 5 furlong turf sprints are won from horses coming from dead last, rating speed horses.
So many
curious decisions made in races.
Well, and that was care. I haven't really had a chance. I was saving this for you and I. Train to Artemis won the Lightning City as the favorite.
She was a huge favorite.
Right, and made perfect sense, obviously, for Kelly. With the 7-1 winner, Chessmaster, with Gallardo.
Yeah. Of course, had no speed and wired the field in a race filled with speed. I mean, went fast doing it. I mean, credit Gallardo. He had a plan, and you know, whether it was his or the trainers or somebody else. So plan and it worked. You know, just you know, yet tomorrow somebody will rate a speed horse and lose a race they could have won.
If I'm not mistaken, I think Nick, you know, we had Nick on Friday go through the sequence, and Nick included Chessmaster. I don't know if he, I don't.
No, I'm not saying he couldn't win. It was surprising how that race was wide open to about 6 horses. I mean, that race. A lot of cases you could make for horses in that race. Most of whom didn't show up.
Well, and then, of course, today's flavor was, you know, was kind of a free square in the sequence.
Yeah. He's a good horse, but he's been extremely fortunate in his races. That's 2 straight inside biases he's had in races with no other speed. He's a nice horse. I think he's getting a little bit dressed up, though, by circumstance. But he still does seem like a horse that, you know, could win a race like, I suppose, could win a race like the John Morrissey in Saratoga. New York Red State. See where he goes. So, when he's running out of conditions, he's only got, I think, the New York. I guess he's got the non-winners at 2 open condition left. Right.
Well, and I'm just, I'm going back for a second, the final total was 1,400. Yeah, 1,448.50 was the.
Well, I'm not interested in trying to do the math. So
no, that was the that was your cross country.
Well, I mean there. The difference between that bet and the copycat bet is that the other bet has CAW money in it, and ours doesn't. And it's going to have a huge effect on how much value you can get over time. I mean, it's just as simple as that.
No, I get it. And of course, the week before, you had an $18,000 payout.
Yeah, well, outliers are usually... I guess depends. You know, too many outliers. It's hard, but it just depends. But they've paid well over time. No question about it.
And Andy, also while we're doing the multi recapping from Friday, and I know you know you're well down the path, but for those that played the pick 5, you know, Sounds Spooky could be leaned on. Mariah's Fortune paid a very healthy $15. Chad's horse, Spirit of St. Louis, the Peter Brandt, Broman bred, but that 15-1 shot, that was tough. Irish Exit,
it's a hard horse to have.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's also a good example of why using the actual ABC method and playing backup tickets. I mean, for me, I had all the others as A's, and, you know, just need to throw it in for a few dollars as a backup ticket, why that's going to pay dividends, and why that method of play is, in my opinion, is the best way to play. Others disagree. Well, oddly, the others disagree to tell you theirs is the only way to play. There's many ways to play. I just prefer that method.
Well, and it paid a little under $2,000, and that was the only tough one.
Very logical horses, and one sort of wacky horse. But that's the whole point of the ABC method.
Exactly.
And the whole point of pick sixes, particularly where it began, is that you're going to see outlier results. And the idea of hitting these bets, it's about surviving races. It's not, you know, yes, you want to, you're going to have at least one decent opinion somewhere in most cases, depending on your bankroll. But the idea is to survive races and give yourself the best chance to win when you're right a high percentage of the time, but it's hard to be right 100% of the time. Give yourself a chance to win even under those circumstances. You know, unfortunately, there's a destructive narrative taking place that far too many people are getting themselves sucked into for matters of ego and all sorts of sad reasons. But it's the most even-handed way to play, in my opinion. But other people will tell you differently.
Well, and the horse was key, being basically in a swing race that was in the, you know, the early pick five sequence carryover, and, you know,
well, eight pick five and then six six.
Exactly.
Well,
the pick six.
Well, eight race cards, you're going to have that happen.
Yeah. Well, that and that's the idea that, you know, about having a backup idea.
No, the idea of having backups is that you give yourself a chance to win when you're right in N minus one of the races. That's the idea.
Exactly. $8,806 when it came to the pick six. And again, all you had to have.
But every other win was logical.
Very logical. Agreed.
It goes back to something that I remember Doc said to me many years ago. He said, you know, this notion that this was before the pick fives, but he said that, you know, if you care about there being 2, 3, or 5 shots or something winning the pick six, and you can't make money, it's just wrong. It relies on the prices of a couple of other horses. And look, I hit a pick six many years ago for a lot of money, $154,000, that the second winner paid 3 to 5. So what?
Amazing.
You thinking that short-priced horses are your enemy in these sequences is a very dangerous way to think. There are races where they're your friends, both positively and negatively. But allowing yourself to lose large multi-race sequences because your ego prevents you from using a heavy favorite sequence is an unfortunate way to play. The idea is to win.
Agreed.
And that gets lost. You know, through some ego-driven concepts. The nice thing for your ego is win money.
Exactly. That's the best. That'll make you feel good every time. Andy, talk about, let's touch on some of the other weekend results, including, we could talk about the Heavenly Prize, where Frost Point, Vargas Aggressive with the Godolphin Mott winner. But what about the David Donk? What about Register? Runner-up.
How about the second place finisher as well?
Yeah, Asmodeus, yeah.
That horse ran, that's a Bill Morey horse, I want to say, right?
Yes, it is, correct.
Yeah, I mean, because the rail was good on Saturday, and so the other horse benefited. I'm not knocking him, he ran very well, too. Yeah, that race came up a super fast race, and our 93 buyer was faster than the stake. You know, and they put a huge amount of distance on some pretty decent maidens. No, I agree. That was an unusual maiden race Saturday. You know, that was as good as any maiden race on paper you've seen anywhere. In a lot of ways, as far as depth, too. No, and I understand that the racing has not been phenomenal on a day-to-day basis, but there have been individually some very good races and some interesting races. It's hard to have, you know, high top racing, especially in the winter in New York, but some of those races have been good. That was a super main race.
Well, excited. I mean, Donk isn't necessarily a candidate to go running, you know, toward Triple Crown type avenues, but this is a super saver and out of an elusive quality mare, and that breaks the maiden going a mile, first time around a ground, one turn, but you know, feels like there's plenty to anticipate. Asmodeus was making a second start, so he won't be a maiden long either. He's a Cairo Prince out of a flatter mare.
Well, he might be Cairo Prince's best dirt horse. Is he any good dirt horses? Just like, you know, turf horses.
That's fair.
Pretty much more effective than turf sire. I say that.
Yeah.
There's always one or two out there, you know. But
sure.
just seems like, for the most part, he's been effective as a turf sire.
Did you see that the Wyckoffs were partners breeding that horse? As Modi,
you just can't keep them down.
Andy, I do want to get, because we do it regularly when it comes to the Triple Crown season and the Oaks and Derby path, some thoughts about what went on here at New Orleans on Saturday, because it was obviously closely watched, particularly the Phillies race. And
you and I have talked about who's Philly off the air for quite a long time. It's hard for me because Tom is my friend, as much as I kid with him. Tom is my friend, and I want to see him do well. And if he has a horse, and I think he's being ridiculous about it, then I'm still rooting for the horse, and I want him to do well with Hoosier Philly. But I think separating yourself from the personal aspect of it, I found all of the hype mystifying. And it doesn't help when you have an irresponsible chart caller that writes things in the chart like Frolicked. It's pandering the lowest common denominator and feeding into a dumb narrative when a chart caller should be accurately portraying what happened and not writing crap like that. And she was a horse that just wasn't running fast figures. And at the end of the day, there are many more things than figures, despite what people want to believe. I'm well aware of that. Having said that, there's nothing more important than how fast a horse is. You know it. I know it. Tom knows it. We all know it. It's how fast they are. And at the end of the day, that notion of they could have gone faster has been proven inaccurate time and time again. That's not to say there aren't some horses that can go faster if pushed, but for the most part, horses run their races. And she just wasn't that fast. And she was obviously beating up a horse that hadn't been that good at the time, but clearly the winner of that race did improve. So for her to be 7-1 in the futures for the Derby, I think that was a perfect analogy to how outlandish the thinking had gotten. She wasn't 7-1 to run in the Derby, period. And she wasn't 100-1 to win it. Yet somehow people made her that price, and thousands of dollars was bet on her at that price, right? I mean, there was,
yeah,
I think there was $300,000 to $400,000 in the pool, so there was $40,000 bet on her. I mean, $40,000 flushed down the toilet, literally. It doesn't mean she couldn't have been a good horse. It doesn't mean she couldn't have improved as a 3-year-old. Look at how much the winner is a pretty mischievous.
Yeah.
Look how much she's improved because Hoosier Philly easily beat her. Now, having said that, she didn't run. I mean, it wasn't really the break. I mean, maybe the break threw off her game because she didn't really stumble badly. It wasn't a good break. I'm not, and it definitely didn't, it hurt her from a positional standpoint.
Yeah.
But she was awful. And it's Tom. I mean, Tom said it himself, you know? She did nothing, basically. So he almost wondered something went wrong, and I hope she's okay physically, and I wouldn't write her off. And certainly Tom knows what he's talking about with horses, but she was a massive hype machine. She was the biggest hype machine of this crop. Is that fair to say?
Feels like it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and what hit, you know, based on what she had done on the racetrack, it was undeserved. And at the end of the day, as handicappers, you got to believe what you're seeing on the racetrack. You can't get yourself caught up in the hype. This person says that horse is better. No, judge the performances for yourself. And if you took those performances and you looked at the speed figures, you recognize they just were okay, but they weren't anything to be that caught up about.
Yeah.
And so she lost. And she was 1-5 when it's not even clear she should have been favored. Now, having said that, the horse who maybe should have been favored was Eased. The fact remains that she was 1-5. I've never seen anything like it. And I don't know anybody that looks at numbers that was a huge fan of hers. Not to say they didn't feel she could win, but they were basically betting against her. And I don't care what figures you looked at. You look at Thoroughgraphs. I guarantee the Thoroughgraphs didn't have her as a big favorite there.
No, I mean there were two horses easily close enough, and even felt like Vava could speed up and improve and compete. Agreed.
So I think the lesson for people is don't get caught up in hype. You know, there's always going to be hyped horses, and for the most part, those are good horses to bet against going forward. And it's just a fact.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it doesn't mean they won't win sometimes. Overbet horses win sometimes. That doesn't, just because a horse wins doesn't mean it may not have been overbet. And by the way, just because you bet on a horse that loses doesn't mean you necessarily made a bad bet.
Exactly.
And that's why the whole conversation about, you know, picking winners. Obviously, at the end of the day, we all need to have enough winners to make money. We need to do things. But it's the discussion. It's the argument. It's the reasoning behind it. And at the end of the day, if the reasoning is sound over time, the winners will come. But you can't allow yourself to get caught up in thinking the only thing that matters is picking winners. Because if you're a really good handicapper, it's very unlikely in life that you're going to bet the fifth best horse in the turf race and get lucky and win. Because you're really not betting the fifth best horse. You may be betting the third best horse. The prices may be right. But it's very unlikely that you will get that beat. If you're not a very good handicapper, you might bet the fifth best horse in the turf race and you might win. Because a whole confluence of events led to that horse winning. And you won't realize it. You'll think you made a great pick.
Hmm.
You cashed, so maybe you did in certain respect, but you didn't. You didn't have good logic, and you got wildly, unfathomably lucky in a way that will probably never happen again in your life. So the process does matter, and this notion at the end of the day that all we're trying to do is pick winners, that's fine, but in my opinion, the discussion is what furthers the game. The game is better by having an intelligent, critical discussion of a race where people learn from it. They may not agree with what you say or I say at the end of the day, which is also fine. You don't have to agree, but it furthers the conversation. It gets people to think about it more. And that's going to increase your interest and your enjoyment of the game, thinking about it more, considering more variables you hadn't considered. Thinking, am I looking at things that maybe I'm overemphasizing? The whole idea of trip handicapping. You know, don't get yourself caught up saying, I'm the best trip handicapper. That doesn't mean anything. What it is do you understand what's important in trips? Is it something's important in some races more important than others? Trying to figure out the things that matter. You know, trying to figure out why certain things happen in races that might not make sense on the surface. Why do horses sometimes spin their wheels behind horses on the inside? There's so many different things to trip handicapping. It's not about the best trip handicapper. It's about trying to understand what's going on out there. And to me, that's why racing is so fascinating. There's so many different factors out there and so many different things to look at. And don't narrow it down to this notion that had anything to do with you and your ego, but trying to figure out what went on. What trouble is meaningful? What is it? A lot of trouble isn't meaningful. And I think what's meaningful about Hoosier Philly, to come back full circle, is that when she didn't break that way, she got herself into a position that put her a bit behind the eight ball based on where she theoretically could have been.
Right.
It probably wouldn't have mattered in that race, but she would have run better. And next time she runs, will she in fact break reasonably well, put herself in position, and therefore run her race? And will that race be good enough? Because assuming she's physically okay, I certainly wouldn't write her off. She's a better horse than she ran on Saturday. She's just not as good a horse as some people wanted to pretend she was. You know, the most shameless thing I saw was a tweet on HRRM saying, is Hoosier Philly better than Rachel Alexandra? That's disrespectful at best to both Hoosier Philly and Rachel Alexandra, whose three-year-old year was perhaps the best three-year-old year of any three-year-old filly in history. Certainly modern history.
Yes.
Don't do things like that. Don't say things like that. Don't put them out there. It just hurts your credibility. And you can say, well, I was asking a question. You know. No, you're proposing something that's preposterous. Anyway, rant over.
That was a good one. That was a good one. And you know, as to betting, picking winners, quote unquote, it's always a good opportunity in this context to remind or to stress that finding horses at advantageous prices and betting them successfully is more, I won't say more important, but you don't
no,
even...
No, the most important thing is how you bet.
Exactly.
You're 100% right.
I was going to say, I mean, you know, finding a horse that you think is going to run well, whether they win or...
Figuring out how to make money with it.
Exactly.
And that's why Nick Camaro is so exceptional, because he not only has a terrific opinion, he is a great bettor. Listen,
Andy.
Buyer was a great bettor. You know, it's funny with Andy. I think Andy was a far better bettor than handicapper. And I don't mean that to knock him as a handicapper. I respect Andy's opinions quite a bit.
You've said that for years.
He's a great bettor. I mean, the guy knew how to turn, you know, he was a Rumpelstiltskin, turning straw into gold. I saw him do it. I was there. I saw it, you know. But yeah, of course. And I think the reason, just to, you know, not to keep belaboring it, but the reason that I talk about the opinions more than, you know, the discussion more than the horse, the good discussion will lead you to winners. The good, sound handicapping reasoning will lead you to winners. Just picking horses without any sound reasoning is just random. Anyone can throw a dart at a program and hit a winner occasionally. But at the end of the day, it's the sound handicapping. And yeah, once every 5 years or 3 years or 2 years, you'll pick the fifth best horse in a turf race and you'll cash a bet. But you'll get buried in the process of getting there. And the whole argument, you know, another idiotically misunderstood comment that I make, which is that I see myself, and I will always believe this, despite morons on Twitter, that my job is to help people lose less. It's very hard to make money at the racetrack, and the majority of people go there to have fun and bet, and a lot of them, and obviously you can take things seriously, but it's still very hard to win, especially without a substantial rebate. And what you want people to do is enjoy themselves more. And they'll enjoy themselves more by doing a better job of understanding racing handicapping and betting horses that can and do sometimes win. If you go to the track with a bad opinion and you bet a bunch of horses that run lousy all day long, that's not going to be a lot of fun from the gambling standpoint. But if you go and maybe you cash a bet or two, or maybe you bet a horse that's 8-1 and the horse runs well and runs second, you feel like the next time you bet that you're going to win. That gives you a feeling that you're more involved and you understand it. I think the best thing any of us can hope to do, is to increase the conversation, increase people's interest and understanding. Because for those of us that love playing the horses, a lot of it is, at least for me, I love the handicapping. I find it fascinating, considering different variables, things that work one day and don't work another, figuring out all the different factors. And I think that's going to increase the enjoyment. So the idea of helping people lose less is an idea of helping them have a better experience when they're betting by being more in the game.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Completely. Well, the exactly right. I mean, that's whatever.
Not exactly right, but it's some version of right.
Exactly. All right. It's...
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
If Fort or Forte wins the Derby, how annoyed do you think I'm going to be about the fact that his name is mispronounced?
Well, maybe there will be a rectification by that time.
By the way, I'm going to read you something. Apparently, Forte, for the people that think it's a correct pronunciation, is only for the Italian musical direction term for loud and strong, where Fort, the correct pronunciation of the spelling, is strength. One strong point.
Yeah.
One would assume it wasn't named for the Italian musical direction.
You know who was?
I know one thing. The one thing I know of all this is that Mike Rapoli will enjoy making fun of me about it. That part of it I appreciate. Do like that it's Mike, who has a good sense of humor, and I can joke around with about it. That I enjoy.
You know what horse was named for?
He will enjoy torturing me. What's that?
You know what horse was named for a musical direction?
Probably.
Our horse, our McLean's Music, Scherzando.
Who?
Scherzando.
Who is that?
Scherzando is our McLean's music that is on his on the comeback. He'll be back. He's been off 6-8 months, had a little stress, a little strain that needed time, and Scherzando means played amusingly.
Okay. Am I done? 2.5 hour.
Yes, you are done.
Okay. Anybody interested coming on next?
Ron Wiggins.
Wow. Speaking of Rachel Alexandra. No, did he train her? Really?
Her father did. His father.
The father. Okay, right. Oh, okay.
His father did. How?
I think he'll agree that comparing, you know, inexperienced 3-year-old fillies making their debut to Rachel Alexandra is heresy.
I agree.
Like, you put something up like that on the internet, and a giant boxing glove should come out of your screen. Or slam a pie, or a hand should come out and slam a giant pie in your face. A big, like, flour.
With water. Sorry, that's what I was just about to say.
Have fun. I gotta go.
Andy Serling, everybody, with an absolute classic performance. He's unbelievable. Oh, he's so good. Speaking of so good, the job, I stressed this already, but the job that Lon Wiggins did with this Angus, then, as I said yesterday, I was going to bring Lon on to talk about what he did with Angus, then, because the story, Lonnie, is so unbelievable. As much as we talked about it going into Friday, the other things that you added to fill in the blanks about him running for just the second time in close to 3 years, and then to basically, you know, be caught in the last stride by Evan Singh. What a tremendous job, and hopefully it gets him back on track to some big stake wins. Lon Wiggins joins us after Anguston's terrific performance. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, I sure appreciate that. Yeah, he ran a big race. We were real excited and still are.
So. He came back all right?
Yes, yeah, came back great. No problems.
Well, before we talk about the race and what lies ahead, you got to give everybody the complete Anguston story, because I was unaware of the van accident, and I mean, this thing, this is like Sweet Polly Purebred in the Dudley Do-Right cartoons.
Yeah, sir. We hauled into Canterbury, and on the way back, south side of Chicago on 65, another car ran the truck and trailer off the road, and also another car off the road. But anyway, he was banged up really, really bad. Both back legs, his head. Yeah, when he came off the trailer, it was like pulling your kids out of a metal bounce house. You know, just, it felt really bad, you know. But we got him healed up. Took almost a year. And we had him about 10 days away from running, and he hurt his suspensory in the front leg. So that was a big gut punch, and we had to start all over again. So, and then almost 2 years later, he got him back to the races. He ran at Churchill in the lounge race, and he won. We had him in a stake race after that, and his final work about 5 days before the race, he hurt his front suspensory again. It wasn't bad at all, but we thought, since it's, you know, let's just stop right now. Let's get him healed back up again. And we did, and he was fine. So we went out to the farm. We ultrasounded him. Everything looked good. Lined up a ride for him to come back into the track. And 2 days later, when he came in, he couldn't walk from the trailer to the stall. He had just a horrible abscess in his foot. Probably it ended up being like 1.5 inches deep. They had to take a piece of bone out, and
wow.
It was really, really bad. So we got him healed up from that, and he was actually ready to run in September. There was a disagreement between the state vets in Kentucky and my vets, which were three vets with 90 years of experience. But anyway, we couldn't run him. So we just sat and wait. We kept working him, never missed a work, never had a problem. And we got the vets here to look at him, and he had to go through the process.
That's a drop. Let's get Lon back. I'll mention. There we go. Yeah, the call dropped on us. No problem.
Yeah. He had to go through the HISA process because we had him nominated to a stake also at Tampa not too long this past weekend. But that fell through because they said the vets here couldn't do it. He had to work at Tampa, and it had to be for their vets. So that was just in case the race here got rained off or something happened like LeCompte weekend. But anyway, we finally got to run him. He ran great. We're really, really proud of him.
Just amazing. And to put the timing into perspective, the trip back from Canterbury, which was the Mystic Lake sprint, that was August of 2019. 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, and just the allowance win at Churchill last June, or June of 21, we should say, not last June, close to 2 years ago. And, what's interesting is that despite all of this, I mean, he's a six-time winner in 21 starts. He's 8 years old now. And to come back and to fire that effort, Lon, it's pretty exciting. I mean, because if he's 100% and everything is behind him, you can go on from here.
Yes, yes, and that's the plan. And everybody around the track knows him. They know him all at different tracks. He's got a pretty big fan base of horsemen, not of fans, because they regular fans don't get to see him very often. But yeah. He's just he's a great horse to be around. He acts like he's two or three, bucks and plays, and just a beautiful horse. Yeah, we wish we had more like him.
Hey, tell us about the origins. I mean, he was a $30,000 Phasic July purchase as a yearling, and has it been consistent ownership throughout?
Yes, yes, the same owners, Twin Magnolia Farm. Jim Jankiewicz is the head partner, and he's had a lot of. There's a good group of people that own a small piece of him, but yeah. And how about the job of them sticking with the horse and going through all of that and being patient? Yeah, just kudos goes out to them.
Oh, in a big way. I mean, to keep paying and okay. And it's not like the whole time has been, $100 a day rate. I mean, he's been, there's been time on the farm and time away and where it's not necessarily, $3,000 a month. However, I mean, to go this long and to not give up hope or for people not to get frustrated and say, well, maybe there's something else he should be doing and it's not meant to be, right? I mean, did that ever come up? Did anybody ever say that?
I did. Because I'm thinking as I'm looking at his form, I'm like, man, people got to think I'm crazy. Why does he keep trying to bring this poor horse back? Everybody that knows him and that's around him, they see him training through the bridle every day and how he acts and plays. He just, that horse wouldn't rather be anyplace else doing any other thing. He's all racehorse.
I love it. Anguston is who we're talking about, he just has been courageous. I mean, what else can you say? He's a Denman, originally originally bred by Bill Hogan, and
what a good bunch of guys they are. Edmund and his son William, they bred the horse. They come and watch him when they run.
They
come back and see him. Just a couple good guys. Really like him.
Well, and actually, I want to look up that mare, because the mare, Mark of Beauty, I've seen that name before. I guess this is her only. She's had two other six-figure earners. She had Thinking of Mom and Steamboat Bill near the end. Anguston was her last foal.
Yeah, she died. I think the year after, I think. Yeah.
She was she was a stake horse. I had a feeling that that name was, and she was a Northeast. She won the Captive Miss at Monmouth. She won the Salem County at Meadowlands. Market. In fact, if I'm going to guess, I'm almost positive that this is Frank and Patricia, that this is a one of their. Let me see if this was a Generazio family. That horse, the name just rings a bell, and now I got to know, because I'm ridiculous this way.
it was probably from Anguston 6 years ago.
maybe actually, you might be right. Right, that's a possibility. Here we it could have been. Here we go, Angus. There we go, Mark of Beauty. By Market Tree. Actually, Pletcher trained her. No, this is, it's not, I guess I'm thinking of the other Marks, Discreet Mark and all of that, but a Market Tree mare out of a, wow, she was out of a Damascus mare. Holy cow. How about that, Lon?
We picked him out at the Fassick Tipton July sale. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Well, it's funny that Andy Serling was just on with me, and he said, who's on next? And I said Lon Wiggins, and Rachel had come up as well earlier. And so when he heard your name, and I talked about Dad, what was one of the great, obviously, one of the really special horses that any of us have ever had a chance. But talk about your own, it's been a while since we spoke, and talk about coming up in the game and the decision to follow Dad.
Yeah, just I always loved going to the track with my dad. During the summer, I would go to the barn with him and then come home, and I had a real good friend, and I would go play golf with him in the afternoon. But yeah, I always made trips with my dad when he went to Delta Downs, Evangeline, anywhere like that to run a horse, and always go with him. But I loved it from a young age, and I'm glad I followed through with it. It's tough being a horse trainer, it's tough with having a small outfit, but you never have much money, but you wouldn't rather be doing anything else.
Well, and then to have a good horse and a horse to focus on, and have the challenges, because obviously this is a horse that had, the talent was obvious from early on.
Yes, yeah, it sure was. I think Joe Christofek, it's one of his first couple of years at Churchill or whatever, and I told him about this horse before the first time he ran. But Joe's been following him a long time too. Joe's a long time friend from the Arlington days when we were up there.
Sure,
he's a good guy.
He was on earlier, and this season, obviously the grass situation. I talked to Al Stahl earlier about Evan Singh, and about the frustration. For those that that come down, you'd hoped obviously to be able to use the turf and to have it you know, essentially cut, they're going to run, I don't know, what, 25% maybe of what would have been in the book total when it's all said and done?
Right. Yes. It's been tough on everybody, but you gotta feel lucky we're running on the turf at all. You know, they made a lot of concessions. They got dealt a bad hand, and they're doing the best they can with it. And we all are. You know, it's not convenient for anybody. But I tell you what, I don't know how Al is still frustrated after winning this race. The worst thing was the next day was watching him serve coffee at Lalo Rodriguez's barn for scratching and him drawing in.
I love it. Yeah, that's funny. The twirling roses coming out of the race, and because Al really wanted it. Well, you between you and Al and. And Catman, everybody was upset, you know, about the race coming off the turf last time.
Yeah, I was just upset if there really wasn't a reason to take it off that day. If they were going to take it off earlier, or if they had thoughts they were going to make it. Maybe take it off. Just give us a little warning. I was just upset. We had owners come in town from four or five different places, you know, and got to explain to them on a beautiful sunny day with no rain. Yeah, they're running these other two turf races, but they took yours off. But it, you know, like I say, they're dealing with a bad hand. And they're doing the best they can, so.
What do you look to? There's one more, right? There's one more sprint coming up at the end of the meet.
They have a balance race in the book. They don't have any more open stake races. They have a Louisiana Bridge sprint on the grass, and the sprint races must tear up the turf more than route races.
Yeah.
So they're really trying to limit those, which is understandable because, you know, it just helps them get the more races on the turf without running the sprint ones. So hopefully everything will be better next year.
What do you run in the allowance or do you look at something else? Wait for Keeneland.
We'll probably wait for Keeneland. Probably. Yeah. Yeah, that's probably what we'll do. We'll sit down with the owners probably this coming weekend and talk it over.
Well, Lon Wiggins, you got a costume today for Mardi Gras?
No. We had to hop in the car and drive to Houston and run one, and we got back real, real late last night, so I'm sure I'll sleep through Mardi Gras.
Oh, here you go. How'd you make out? I didn't look.
Second. Another second.
Jeez. Ay.
That's all right. She ran good. She tried hard.
Well, you've only run eight, but you've got 4 seconds on the year. They're piling up.
Right. Yeah. Need to turn those into wins.
So. All right. Well, soon enough, right? Lon, I absolutely wanted to congratulate you on a tremendous job of horsemanship, and you know, especially in this atmosphere where there's just incredible pressure on everybody when it comes to doing the right thing and you know and basically you know thinking for the horse and interpreting what the horse is telling you and this horse kept telling you that he wanted to keep running and proved it on Saturday.
Well, thank you. I sure appreciate that. And, props to all the small outfit trainers out there. They can do a good job too. So hopefully owners will send them horses.
Well, and that includes you. If anybody wants to be in good hands, and Lon, one of the great thrills for me was getting to know your father, and that goes all the way back to Saratoga, that one summer when he came to Saratoga. And that's when I met him. And remember Perfect Sleeper?
Oh, yeah. Sure do. he was a runner.
That's one of those examples. It's funny this comes up. It's one of those examples that nobody knows. I mean, there's a horse whose career was interrupted, chipped a knee in his debut, and looked so spectacular and exciting. And, you know, he had a useful career, but there's no telling what that horse could have been and what kind of a stake horse he would have been.
Yes, yeah, that's right. Yeah, he could really run.
And that's what, you know, that there's so many like that, that, you know, bad luck horses, and that's what makes the Anguston story so gratifying.
I agree. Yeah, you don't hear those stories too often.
Lon Wiggins, everybody. Lon, thank you so much, and continued success. We'll see you next, probably in Kentucky.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you very much, Steve.
You got it. Lon Wiggins, everybody, and that was some tremendous effort by the horse and by the owners to stick with it, keep paying the bills, and, I mean, the van accident, the suspensory issues, then, you know, frankly, things kind of conspiring on a bad luck basis between the vets and the off the turf and on. So I thought that was going to be, exactly what it was, worthwhile, and wanted everybody to appreciate what Lon and the group, what they did here to keep this horse going. Tremendous. It is crazy. I mean, his last three starters, all two at Fairgrounds and one at Sam Houston, all seconds. That's three too many seconds when you're... who was it that... who was that on the air? Who was it that said... that had to do with you, Robertson, on Saturday, I think. Somebody said I think one of his owners, right? About not finishing, not winning. You got to be happy. The horse, you know, horse ran great, was second, and you Robertson was not happy finishing second. As we said with Andy, finishing second, you might be able to get paid. Popo, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Oh, hold on. What happened here? Where are you? Let's try that again. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
There we go. Popo, how was your weekend?
Yeah, kind of a mixed bag. Had success, but wasn't at Fairgrounds, ironically. Primarily Laurel, Tampa, and actually the best... payoff was in the seventh at Aqueduct on Saturday. Born to Win actually had the exact cold register over Esma Beesis. It paid, I think, $57 for a buck. So, kind of spread around, but lots of seconds, unfortunately, at Fairgrounds, and actually the price horse. And the big race was that Form to Win actually had second, and he finished second, was...
Sun Thunder.
Yep. Yeah, so yeah. We talked about him. I mean, that's the horse I was interested in. Unfortunately, I couldn't pair him with the... I tried to pair him with others. I keyed off him but did not have the winner. So no real success there. Good idea, but wasn't able to capitalize on it.
Well... that'll happen, and that's sort of a little bit of the theme today between Anguston second. We did talk about some wins with McPeak and with Al Stahl as well. But how about today? We got about 2 minutes, and did we look at that Mardi Gras stake?
I did virtually every race at Fairgrounds today. So
cool.
That's race eight.
Yeah.
Do we have scratches yet or no, Steve?
Yeah, you're clean. Only the AEs.
Okay. Well, I actually like one of the AEs, nope. But nothing I'm going to try to beat the favorite here in Aubert. I'm interested in the 8 horse Going Good at 4-1, excuse me. And then the 2 horse Minute Waltz, who hasn't won in a while, but both those horses were ranked top 2 or 3 when I ran them through using a filter of between 5 and 5.5 furlongs on the turf, last 4 starts over the last 12 months. So be interested in some of those prices and try to beat the favorite. I mean, it's a good sequence, but we're going to need some prices to come through. Like if you wanted to look at that late pick 4, race 6, 3 horse I'm interested in, Master Game, the 5 horse, Unified Dreams, the 7 horse, and then Pacific Island Time, the 1 horse. That's a good race. Try to beat the morning line favorite in morning cup. And then race 7, going 6 furlongs. The 4 horse Twirling Roses, the 5 horse Zippin' Gigi, fit, and then, you know, favorites, Flint Ridge, who was ranked 2nd, but I would try to beat the favorite there. And then going to the nightcap, this is a Maiden Flaming. The 5 horse Chelsea's Glory at 6-1, fit. The 6 horse Astrology Protege at 4-1, and then the 10 horse Chippy at 5-1. So a good sequence, and could actually do fairly decent if we can get some of those favorites out of the top spots, Steve.
Excellent. All right. I had Joe for a couple of minutes, Christofek, and we touched on the slate, because this is obviously the biggest of the, you know, the Tuesday venues. Just I think what 4 today or 5 venues, parks, and Mahoning Valley, yeah, this is it's Mardi Gras. So of course today should be the focus. Yeah, parks.
Yeah, and it's the last day before Lent starts. So,
well, that's the idea.
For those of you that are giving up, I'm going dry. So,
are you really? All right.
Yeah, it's I do enjoy the bourbon, but you know, there's other things that I gotta really concentrate on. And so I'm going giving up bourbon and alcohol. For at least Lent, and maybe forever, Steve.
I remember when I pushed. I was mid drink myself one day, and I said, "You know what?" I said, "I think I'm satiated. I think that's it." I literally pushed one away from me, and never had another. So you will see how it goes with you.
Yeah, I'm interested to see. So, should be fun.
I love Papo. I appreciate it, and good Mardi Gras to you, and I'll talk to you Friday.
Yeah, sounds great, Steve. I'll talk to you later.
Here we go. We're going to send it out, a little second line jump to send you into Mardi Gras, and what a fun week we've had here. There you go. Bring it up, Case. There it is. You're hearing that up and down Basin Street, Canal Street, everywhere. Thanks to Al Stahl and Alan Foreman, Kenny McPhee, Joe Christofek, Andy Cernley, Lon Wiggins, and Papo, and everybody here. Happy Mardi Gras, folks. Talk to you tomorrow from Hot Springs.
best in North America, but we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing?